We hear in the headlines, we see in the newspapers that, oh no, all these things that we depend on government for are going to go away because the federal government's cutting all this spending. I didn't really see that in the big, beautiful bill, but we're going to find out what Senator John Braun saw in the bill and how it affects Washington. Welcome to the show, Senator John Braun.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So the big, beautiful bill, now from my perspective, being a former business owner and taxpayer, a person that's trying to own a home. And, obviously we see the cost of living going up. I wish it was less big and more beautiful and, people got to keep more of their money. I guess there was part of that, some tax cuts, but it was just still a lot of spending. And I don't know why entities are so afraid, unless they're doing something nefarious, about federal funding when the bill increased spending.
Yeah, there's a lot of fear mongering out there, and this is a giant bill. It has things as Medicaid issues, taxes, agriculture, energy, border security, national defense, all these wrapped up into one bill. Most of the fear mongering here in Washington State has been about the impact that the changes to Medicaid will have on our citizens. And I call it fear mongering because they're wildly overstating what has been done. And we can talk about that more detail as we get into it. But I mean, the bottom line is, if we are going to preserve Medicaid for the folks who truly need it, the disabled, elderly, children, pregnant women, who it was originally intended for, we have to have some level of accountability to make sure we're not misusing these funds. That misuse is putting the entire program at risk for the folks who most require assistance.
Well, and it seems to me that I think the biggest fear in Washington, I don't trust the headlines. I don't trust necessarily what the bureaucrats are telling these reporters, because I think their fear is that there is a lot of waste. There is a lot of fraud. There is a lot of money that's going out to contractors and entities that are political in nature in one industry or another, funding lobbyists, this, that, the other, that don't really provide what certain federal grants are supposed to be funded for. And I think that that's why they're afraid that they're not going to have the funding or the money, and they're angry, is because what we have is a federal administration that is now looking at drilling down on where's all this money going, what's the outcomes, what's the metric success, what's the return on investment. And you don't hear that much in government, in the media, where's the return on investment for how much we're spending.
Yeah, so, I mean, the return on investment, again, speaking about Medicaid, just because that's where the biggest state impact is the return on investment is helping people who truly need it. But you can only do that if you have accountability. And we have enormous amount of misuse of Medicaid in our state and around the country. The bill does just a few things to try to get that under control, and it doesn't solve all the problems. And I want to be clear, I think broadly the bill is worth supporting, but it's just a step in the right direction. We have a long way to go. But it does simple things that broadly support it across the political spectrum, like work requirements for able-bodied adults, meaning, no disability, no kid, no dependents over 13, I think is the age. And meaning if you are able to get up in the morning, go to work, we're going to require you to work at least 20 hours a week, not a high bar by any standard. And if you could work, you can go to school, you can be looking for work, you can be volunteering. So this is a pretty low requirement to say, if you're going to get free health care from the federal government through the state, it's a federal funded program, but a state managed program, you got to be involved as well. That's a really pretty straightforward thing. And we've seen this before in our country back in the 90s when President Clinton put in work requirements for food stamps, now called SNAPs, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The outcomes were actually really good. People returned to work. They found earned success. They were able to actually make their lives better over time by re-engaging in the workforce. That's a good thing long term. That's just one of the things it does. It also does some really simple things, like make sure individuals aren't signed up in multiple states. This was actually a bill Republicans proposed in the Senate this last session. It says, hey, if you shouldn't be enrolled in Washington state and then also enrolled in another state in the country. That doesn't mean you get more health care. It just means we're collectively paying twice as much for that health care. And in Washington State, the estimate, there's about $150 million worth of savings for folks who are dually enrolled. Now, some of that won't be realized because the right state might be Washington, and in other cases, it might be some other state. But that's a big number, a big number by anybody.
Yeah. I think that the problems that we face, there's so many details, and we get lost in talking points from the media or maybe even, you know, the bills when there are really complex issues like that. Like if you're a resident of Washington State, and I've actually witnessed this, you know, it's anecdotal, where there was a mother and a father. I don't believe they were married, and they were getting public assistance in Oregon and in Washington, but they had only one child. So they were driving very nice vehicles, brand new, very nice vehicles, nicer than a lot of the people in the working class neighborhoods that I was in. And so you see this fraud. It's obviously, to me, it was fraud. But both states are paying it. And I think we should drill down on some of this because I had a conversation with Representative Chris Corey back during the legislative session about how much money is in our state budget to fund people not here legally. And of course we look at these things. Well, if somebody could just, you know, be in Canada and say, well, I need a healthcare procedure, I'll just go into Washington, go to a hospital, tell them I'm undocumented, and you get free healthcare.
Yeah. I mean, this is exactly the issue. I keep going back to this, but we have these programs in our state to help people who really need it. And when you have people who are taking advantage of that program, they don't really need the help. They're not disabled. They're not suffering from some sort of special ailment or injury, or they're getting these benefits when they're not eligible. That just takes away from what we can do for people who really need this assistance. It's wrong on many levels, as you can imagine. It's also very costly, and fundamentally, it puts the entire program at jeopardy.
I think it does, especially with the federal funding, whether it's in, you know, the Medicaid or education, and I think that we kind of rely too much on federal funding in some of these areas that are really local issues. But when it's there, it's part of the funding model in these budgets. There are effects to, you know, long-term programs that people are used to. And there's, you know, jobs also at the state level. So what do you think about the administration? Are you concerned that the state government, under the current governor, is going to put federal funding at risk because of violations of laws and how the funding is supposed to be used?
Well, that's a much broader area than just the big beautiful bill. But yeah, we've already seen that where funding in our higher education is at risk, funding in K-12 is at risk because they've taken positions, local positions, that are in violation of state law, whether it's Title IX or whether it's you know, so many federal laws that protect children and parents in K-12 public education. They've taken these positions that are radical, and that's not even to mention the whole issue with creating what is essentially a sanctuary state, and the impact that it may very well have to federal funding long term. These are risky positions, ones that most of the, you know, if you actually ask people of all political persuasions, they don't necessarily agree with. They're not looking for state government to take very partisan positions. They're looking for just good government that is reasonable, that delivers the services the state needs to deliver, and doesn't wade into controversial issues that may affect the fundamental budget for the state long term.
Now, is some of this because I think that they've taken these radical positions, but it seems to me that federal agencies that, you know, get the money from Congress and things like this big beautiful bill, or what they did in continuing resolutions to continue funding things, programs, and dollars going to states and cities, counties, that there was really nobody really watching how the money was being used for too long a period of time. It was just kind of on automated service there. The funding is going out. And we weren't thinking about the return on investment as much, and we weren't really drilling down on those. And it seems like this administration doing that, now the system and all the machinery is, starting to make noise. Like, we don't want this oversight.
Yeah, going back to the Medicaid discussion, people don't realize that Medicaid expense in our country has gone up by over 60% just since 2019. Think about that. Basically, a little over five years, Medicaid expense has gone up by 60%. That was initially driven in 2020 with the pandemic, and then President Biden let a whole bunch of folks come on to Medicaid who weren't really qualified, and then kept it. We required them to stay there for quite a while. So this bill is doing is not reducing funding. It's just simply slowing funding, you know, back to what they, you know, 5 years ago when it was already pretty robust and pretty substantial. This is when you really understand and put it in perspective over a few years, you see that you're actually right that the funding got out of control and fundamentally put the program at risk. And Congress has laid out a bill, and the president has signed a bill that simply rights the ship and makes it more stable going forward. And as I say, it's not perfect. We got a ways to go yet, but it gets us headed back in a better track towards a more sustainable budget at the federal level.
Well, I think so. And I think that not just sustainable budget at the federal level, I think we look at what just got passed as a budget in Washington state with a lot more taxation. And you think, well, there's inflation. So government's got to, you know, pay higher wages. Oh. You know, the grocery bill went up. So you got inflation, you got maybe growth in population. So, but that's not 60%. That's not 40%. That's not what we've seen in a doubling in our state budget. Like you say, a 60% increase just in the one program. It's not, and I hate the word sustainable, really. It's become one to dislike because we've been saying the word so much, it's really ruined. But we have to be on a path that obviously makes sense for the taxpayers because you can only take so much. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break again. We're going to be right back with Senator John Braun, Washington State Senator, leader of the Senate, I believe, in the minority. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are only on the air and podcast because you support this program. You, the listeners, we are listener supported. Keep us on the air to keep all these interviews and shows going. Please go to rightspokaneperspective.com. There's a donate button there. Or you can send your donation to Right Spokane Perspective, LLC, P.O. Box 7620-99207. Thanks, and back to the show. And welcome back to Right Spokane Perspective on this Federal Money Friday, I guess. But we need to talk more, not just about the federal money, but the state money. Now, there's a lot of programs that also get federal money, whether it's your local law enforcement, your local school district, again, healthcare entities. But we need to make sure that those dollars are being used wisely. And I just saw that the state of Idaho, the neighbor just to the right of Washington, politically and physically, if you're looking at a map, decided that their food assistance programs needed to give more healthy food to individuals that are low income and not soda pops and energy drinks and things that are unhealthy. So probably going to be a lot of savings to the taxpayer and the state government food assistance program there. So Senator John Braun is on the line with us today. Jump in and let's talk about that, because I think they're freaking out about possible money savings in Medicaid, but there's other areas where I think we could save some money and have healthier people, not just in the healthcare area.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And one of the other items that's in the Big Beautiful Bill is some accountability measures in what they call SNAP, State or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly known as food stamps. And what they do is they change the amount of administrative costs the state has to pay, because the state drives those costs and they need to have skin in the game. And then they also say, hey, if your error rate, meaning you deliver these benefits to someone who doesn't qualify, if your error rate is over 6%, you got to pay part of the bill. The federal government's not going to pay the whole bill in the future if you have a high error rate. In Washington, our error rate has been right around 6%, a little over 3 of the last 5 years. So we know we can get there, and it's the right thing to get there. Again, we talked a little bit before about making sure these programs are preserved and held accountable for the people who really need them. Getting it delivered to the right people is super important. It's completely a state responsibility. And you bring up another point that's not really addressed in the federal legislation, but something we should be looking at the state level is what you can purchase with food stamps over time has gotten really broad. So you can buy a lot of things that are of little or no nutritional value. You know, the common one people refer to is energy drinks that don't have you know, any real valuable caloric intake. It's just you know, it's just convenient for some folks. And we cover it with food stamps. And Idaho's taken a much more stringent, you know, kind of sort of healthy approach to the whole program. And I think it's something that maybe we could learn something from our neighbors to the east in the Absolutely. Future in our application of this program.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that if we had an honest conversation with just about any hardworking family out there that sees kids, maybe sometimes adults too. I mean, but you see even just kids, apparently their parents gave them the EBT card and they're going hog wild at the convenience store buying overpriced, unhealthy junk food. And you're thinking, I won't even buy those items because I can't afford them. And I want to feed my kids things that are healthier than that. And this shouldn't just be a junk food binge for people in supposed poverty. And I think that their healthcare outcomes, you said preserving programs, it seems like the amount of preservatives that are going into these kids, maybe they're getting preserved a little.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, and you get it a bigger problem. When people see this when they're at the store, it drives the frustration we see in our state and our country right now with obvious mismanagement of programs intended in goodwill to help people who are struggling, getting mismanaged and misused. It just drives this very high level of frustration in our population.
But also, it also drives the budget. I mean, a big chunk of right. our state budget is human resources, right? Where DHS is the big one in Washington state where they're providing all sorts of different federally and state funded programs. And like the food, it's a lot less cost if you just drink water instead of something unhealthy, right? And there's also a problem with that when we're talking about Medicaid or whether it's the food stamp program, where entities want to preserve the money coming to them. So it's hard for lawmakers to cut anything anywhere because someone somewhere is making money, even if it's to the detriment of the taxpayer or the end user of the programs.
That's right. We get wound up in programs that make no sense when you look at them, but they've been in place for many years, and therefore people have become to rely on them, or a bureaucracy is built up around them. So when you go to make a change, even if it's a very logical, very popular change, you get a lot of pushback. We're seeing that, again, going back to Medicaid, one of the changes they made was we have this program in Washington, it's been in place roughly 15 years, where the hospitals tax themselves and they collect that money and they're able to get a match, a federal match on that money to bring more federal money into the state. And it never made sense. And it's been called risky by folks from both sides of the political spectrum. Everybody knew that it couldn't be sustained. But over time, the budget came to rely on this. And now the federal government is saying, no, this doesn't make sense. And they're doing it pretty carefully. They're easing out of it over the next 6 years. I think they did a good job of recognizing that healthcare in our communities it currently relies on this. You can't just pull the rug out from under it, but you got to get back to something more reasonable, more common sense. It doesn't look outlandish on the face of it.
Well, and I think that's the tough thing, especially for conservatives. We say, wait a minute, we got to stop doing that. But the problem is, I mean, it's kind of like the drug addict. Sometimes if you stop them all at once, the withdrawals kill them, right? And I think some of these programs are a little bit like a drug addict that needs to get off of the dose they're on. And you just, to do it all at once causes such a big problem in so many areas, whether, you know, of any side of what government funds, but the stuff also came in slowly. So you have to try to transition out of the funding mechanisms, models, and programs. You can't do it all at once. It's politically impossible, but it's also can be damaging to jobs and economies and different things. And so I get that, but it's hard to do that. Cause it's like, okay, we'll go back to the food stamp, the food assistance program, the CREEP. You brought up the energy drinks. Well, I think it was probably 15 or 20 years ago, and I was asking the guy at the convenience store, I'm like, how can these people buy these energy drinks with their food stamps? And he says, oh, these energy drinks have dairy in them. So it was like this, we think about, you know, the federal government and discussion around wars, like mission creep. Okay, are we trying to keep people healthy or are we just giving people whatever they want with somebody else's money? And that's kind of where we've gotten, is you can buy anything. You can buy lobster, you can buy whatever you want. As long as it's not a prepared food, supposedly. So now they're just, you know, they sell it to you, they just don't cook it for you.
Yeah, I mean, this is the challenge with government over time. If you don't constantly watch the budget, watch the deep inside the budget, the growth in parts of the budget, both the state level and presumably at the federal level, it just grows over time. And just looking at our state budget, not even taking the federal budget into account, but our state budget has grown at twice the rate of median income in our state over the last 10 years. That means for median income growth in our state, which is pretty good compared to the other states in the country, we've been doing reasonably well. Our state government is growing twice the rate. Nobody thinks that's reasonable. It's simply a spending problem because we haven't kept a close eye on the programs we've talked about today and other programs in the budget that have just, you know, grown out of control without any close supervision, because the bureaucracy takes over and says, well, one more thing and one more thing and one more thing, and it gets really expensive over time.
Well, it gets to the point where, just like with the food assistance program, a lot of people think, you know, what the WIC program, okay, you got a young expecting mother, you know, you want healthy foods, you know, meat, cheese, celery, you know, some other, you know, carrots. So you have a specific food item so that you get good, healthy outcomes for these mothers and these children. The Women, Infant, Children program, I believe is what it's called. And people think, oh, well, have food assistance programs work that way? So you have healthy outcomes. That's the whole purpose of it, isn't it? So that people are fed, don't go hungry, and there's health and nutrition. But we don't. I mean, what is off the list right now in Washington State for many of these programs? It's like the door is open to spend anywhere and everywhere, even if it's not the goal of the funding, whether it's, you know, education or I look at public safety. We're the least policed state in the nation, and there was a little bit done to fund law enforcement, but those funds could actually go anywhere.
Yeah, whole other issue we could talk about, but yeah, it takes constant attention, and frankly, we haven't got the level of oversight that the public deserves from the current Democratic majorities. They're more interested in their special interests, especially when it comes to the organizations that rely on these programs, than they are they're more focused on them than they are to the average person who wants to do the right thing for people who are having trouble, but also wants it to be affordable and not to rely on more and more taxes. And we saw right this year, you know, they got just out of control with, you know, almost $13 billion over the next 4 years in new taxes that will make everybody's life less affordable, all in an effort to keep some of these programs in place that are frankly being mismanaged.
Well, and I think a lot of people look at it's the programs we're talking about today, right? We're talking about assistance programs that are a big part of the budget, and cities have spent a fortune on what they call homelessness. You ask most people out there, they're going to say it's drug addiction. And so there's no accountability. And obviously the homeless population is also using a lot of healthcare dollars. And, you know, how is a person going to be proving that they're looking for a part-time job when they're living on the streets doing drugs and dying, by the way? I mean, Washington State's going in the wrong direction with that. And it's like, are drugs even illegal in Washington, open use? And those are kind of concerns of the taxpayers. Like, okay, we're paying more in taxes to live in Washington than we paid before, but was there a return on investment? Are we getting value for the tax dollars that are extracted from us? And I think a lot of people don't feel that that's the case.
That's exactly right. There's this growing distrust that state government is not delivering what they promised, or if they're delivering it, they're delivering at a price that is way out of range. Particularly, you know, you mentioned homelessness. That's another, you know, topic we could talk a long time on. But we've developed this homeless industrial complex that just keeps asking for more and more money. But we aren't holding them accountable and saying, hey, what are you delivering in terms of getting these folks back on their feet, back into a normal lifestyle? We just aren't. And right. And it's getting more and more expensive for regular people who are just trying to live their lives and have a decent cost of living here in the state of Washington.
Well, Senator Braun, I'll give you an example. Well, the mayor of the city of Spokane, former state senator Lisa Braun, she celebrated the point in time count that there's less homeless people supposedly in the city of Spokane. But the problem is that the number of people experiencing homelessness in Spokane has gone down less than the amount of people that have died of drug overdose on our streets. So it means that all, we've spent all that money that didn't really get people out of homelessness, and the number's only dropping by the amount of people that are dying. In fact, there's the numbers still kind of growing a little bit. And then that doesn't even calculate the number of people we supposedly got out of homelessness for the tens of millions of dollars we sent in Spokane. So celebrating that number to me just recently here in Spokane was pretty frightening, actually. And are we going to make open drug use illegal at some point? Maybe get these people some help before they die, because we're spending all this money, but yet the solutions that most people think should be pretty obvious, government just doesn't seem to be able to get.
Yeah, I mean, we were able to change the law 2 years ago to make drug use illegal again. It went for about 3 years, or it was essentially legal. And now it's up to local authorities, including the local mayors and their in the law enforcement, to enforce those rules. In some places, they're doing a good job. In some places, less so. But, you know, when you see, you know, the only reduction in your example, the only reduction in homelessness is the folks who have died from you know, drug overdose. That's pretty scary and pretty sad. That we that's the best we can do in that community. We need to do better.
Well, especially when we're taking that much money out of the state budget to fund local things, because as we talked about in the first half, primarily you got that federal money that comes in, but then you got the state money, and then you also got your local money, and so there's all these funds from the different sources of taxpayers coming in. We should definitely, like you said, see some results, and I'm glad that you guys did change a few of those laws to actually, I think it was make open drug use a gross misdemeanor possession, but Washington State's got a long ways to go, folks. I want to thank Senator John Braun for his time today. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me on.